Hello, I'm Martin Rosendale, CEO of the Maryland Technology Council and partner with Newport. And you're listening to Capital M, the podcast addressing capital markets in Maryland and the Mid-Atlantic. The Maryland Technology Council is the industry trade association representing the technology and life science industries throughout Maryland. Together with our members, we are improving the business climate in Maryland and helping companies that save, secure, and improve lives around the globe. Capital M podcast is intended to further the regional conversation around capital markets, define issues, identify solutions, and build consensus to drive change. My guest today is Tony Cord. Tony is my partner at Newport and the managing director for the organization in the Mid-Atlantic. Tony, welcome.
Marty, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Tony, I've known and worked with you for a couple of years now. You're very entrepreneurial, extraordinarily well-connected, and enthusiastic about the business success in this region. Would you take a few minutes to tell us a bit about yourself and what makes you so optimistic?
Sure. I'm happy to tell you a little bit about myself and to describe why I'm so optimistic. First, I'm a local guy. I grew up and have built my family and career in the DMV region. And I grew up in the 60s and 70s, which for me left an imprint. That imprint is that America's great and that our strength is in our freedom, our diversity, and that the possibilities are limitless. So I come at business and life from a perspective of optimism. Some would say the glass is half full mentality, but to me, this is a great region to live, work, and play, and it gives me great optimism that the state of Maryland is undergoing a very significant transformation right now to become more business friendly. And for the Maryland Technology Council, your focus, Marty, you and your team, on helping companies that are improving and saving lives is transformational, first. And secondly, a huge reason for all of us to be optimistic today and for the future.
That's great, Tony. Thank you. I agree with you. I couldn't agree more, actually. There's a lot of great and exciting things going on in Maryland. Tony, we have about 460 members at the Maryland Technology Council today, and I get out and talk to as many of them as I can, as often as I can. And often the two most significant issues that I hear are access to capital and workforce. Now, this podcast is intended to address the capital issues. And so I'm curious, from your perspective as an advisor to CEOs, what does it mean for a company to be ready for the capital markets?
Let's start with some statistics. I think nearly everyone listening in will have heard the horror stories of business failures. And if you think about the common thread for failure, it's plainly lack of planning. And so companies typically are busy dealing with the weeds, what we at Newport call the tyranny of the urgent, and they rarely take the opportunity to get up to higher ground to think strategically, to work on their business, not in their business. So in the context of being ready for the capital markets, you got to be in planning mode. You have to have a plan, and that takes time. And that plan has to take you to a higher level where you're thinking strategically about what are we doing with our company, where are we headed, and then begin to think about your positioning with the capital markets. If I had to be more granular, I would say getting ready for the capital markets means having a clear business strategy. What is the market? How are you going to be providing and creating value to that market? And secondly, a proven track record that your strategy is working now or can work in the future. And that begs the question of pointing to something that proves that your strategy is actionable and not just a theory. So to recap that, proven track record that a strategy is working or workable is incredibly important. The next thing is a management team with the right skills and capabilities to carry out that strategy. So you've gotten to higher ground, you've thought about your strategy, you've identified how the strategy is working now. Do you have the right human capital, the people in the right positions on the team and rowing in the same direction? It's okay if you don't, but recognizing that is incredibly important. Are there gaps? If so, where? And if so, how do you fill those gaps? In the context of capital markets, a lot of the success or failure in raising money will come down to the leadership team and the ability to demonstrate that you can manage the risks involved in your business. You can mitigate those risks involved in your business. And every business has risks, and it principally comes down to leadership. So as we go through this podcast today, I think one thing to note is, even though we're talking about money, what's going to be really important is leadership, management teams, people. Because if we get that right, we can de-risk the business in the eyes of a prospective investor. So the third thing that I want to mention is having appropriate financial insight to an understanding of your own business. Do you really understand what drives the numbers in your business? I mean, really. You might be an entrepreneur and be able to create products and sell like there's no tomorrow, but do you really, really understand and have insight into how the accounting and financial operations of the business truly operate? So do you understand your cost structure? Do you understand how that changes as you go to scale from where you are today to something beyond you or your entrepreneurial startup team? Do you know where the cash comes from and where it goes? Do you have a basic but effective budget, forecast, and key performance indicator or KPI tools? So those are key questions. To summarize all that, again, in the context of getting ready for the capital markets, having appropriate financial insight to an understanding of the business by you as the entrepreneurial founder, CEO, and your CXO team, that's incredibly important. The fourth thing I want to mention is a clear path through what we call investor due diligence. That's where a prospective investor gets under the hood of your organization and asks a lot of questions before they provide capital. So what's important is, have you thought about the kinds of questions that are likely, and can you and will you provide that kind of information? In the real world, that turns out to be a problem, both from a logistical and a content and a psyche perspective. So from a content perspective, do you have the information, the logistics? Can you get it to the prospective buyer in the form of a data room or some kind of confidential transfer of the information? And psychically, are you willing, as an entrepreneur, and many of us are to our credit and sometimes to our own detriment, high control people, are we willing to share information about the business, the good, the bad, and the ugly? That's a key question, because not all of us are willing to do that. So a clear path through investor due diligence is very important, and that's all part of being ready for the capital markets. Clear business strategy, proven track record that you have a strategy that's working or will work, a management team with the right people in the right seats, appropriate insight into how your business actually works, how the money flows, and then a clear path for investor due diligence.
Tony, that's great. I want to dig a little bit deeper into the leadership team and the management team issues that you're talking about. But before I do, just a quick question. So the difficulty in raising capital and access to capital comes up often in the Mid-Atlantic region. Is access to capital a problem unique to this region, or is it simply a problem that all startup businesses face at some point?
It's a really important question, because you could ask this question in Nashville, Tennessee. You could ask it in Akron, Ohio. And I think that entrepreneurs would agree raising capital is hard. But the reality is, there is unprecedented capital available in the United States. as of January 2019, over $1 trillion of so-called dry powder, uninvested capital designated for businesses in the United States is available. So the issue is, can that unprecedented amount of capital flow efficiently to the kinds of businesses that the listening community is building or thinking about building? And so it goes to the leadership and the management teams. I would say that, A, raising capital is hard. Everyone will agree to that wherever they are. B, there's plenty of capital available. C, the issue is, can we have a concerted effort to de-risk our enterprises and make them more attractive to prospective investors? Look, investors are risk-averse. They're looking to have their fears about risks addressed and a story about how we're mitigating the risks in some key areas. I would say that in the state of Maryland, we have unbelievable federal, natural, and public resources and private resources, and we have huge pools of talent because of those factors, and we have great institutions from NASA to the FDA to the NIH, and all of that is just a signal that we're in the right place. But all of this talent, all of these great resources does not help to raise money if there's a perception of risk. And it's my opinion that there is a perception that management teams of startup and emerging growth and lower middle market companies are quickly judged to be immature or the wrong teams to execute and to be good stewards of investment capital. So, Marty, to answer your question a little more succinctly, is access to capital a problem unique to this region? No. And does it have to do with the dollars and cents being available? No. What it has to do with is the perception and reality of entrepreneurs de-risking their business in order to facilitate the flow of investment capital.
Okay, that's great, Tony. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. So let's come back to the leadership teams and the management teams in the companies. I know that as a CEO advisor, you deal with a lot of C-suite executives. And I know through your connections and introductions that you made for me that these are some very high-level, very successful people. So when you're working with a company and you're working with a leadership team, what are the important leadership traits? You talk about de-risking the company, and it seems to me that having a management team that's confident, mature, understands the markets that they're in, that is an aspect of de-risking as well in the eyes of an investor. So when you're looking at these companies, advising the CEOs, what are the important leadership traits that you think are necessary?
One of the most important things that I look for, and I think that my colleagues at Newport look for, is what can be called coachability. Is a leader or the leadership team flexible to take the inputs of experienced, insightful others, whomever they are, and digest those insights and perspectives and deploy them in a way that helps reduce risk? A different way of saying that is, if we've stepped in a pothole previously and we can advise a CXO, a startup founder, an entrepreneur, that she or he might want to go around that pothole, and she accepts that insight and counsel, that's a good thing. It doesn't always happen that way, Marty. Entrepreneurs are very strong-willed people, and the balance that we look for is someone who has the fire in the belly, the great vision and energy to execute, but also is coachable, open to leverage the experience of others and take that counsel and be even better as they deploy on their business idea.
Tony, I had an opportunity to moderate a panel recently, a panel of investors at a conference here locally. And it was interesting. One of the topics that came up on this panel, and all the panel was made up of some fairly successful investors, was the issue of diversity. And that investors today, many of them are looking for diversity in management teams, in boards. And I'm wondering, you know, in your experience, what is the value of diversity for a company?
Marty, going back to what I said earlier, growing up in this region, I had great reason to have optimism. What I did not mention was the fantastic diversity of the workforce here. Because of the great assets that we have, the federal assets, the private sector assets, the natural resources of the region, we have great people coming here from all over the world. I've embraced that. And what I have seen, both anecdotally and empirically, is that more diverse leadership teams win. So if you're talking about business in the context of serving, selling products, doing good with your mission, diversity is a great thing. And I would just say that we're very fortunate in the DMV. The state of Maryland has some of the largest number of woman-owned businesses on the planet. And those women are typically of color, and they bring to bear a whole different set of sensibilities and experiences that benefit the marketplace. So it makes for better workplaces. It makes for better customer and client experiences. And I think that the best organizations that our team in Newport sees are ones that are largely diverse, diverse at the board or advisory board level, diverse at the management level, diverse at the staff level, because the reality is we're serving a very diverse community in most cases with our businesses.
Tony, just to pursue this a little bit further, I see when companies that I've worked with that when there isn't much diversity, there also isn't much flexibility in the point of view tends to be very narrow. And when there is diversity, the view of the world is broader. The view of the business is broader. It leads to more creative solutions. And the question that I'm leading up to is, do you think investors are beginning to see this now? And since we're talking about capital markets, do you think this is leading to more investment or, for lack of a better word, easier investment for companies that can demonstrate that kind of diversity?
I wish I could say unequivocally yes, but I can't. It's a slow process, and it takes focus on diversity, not just talking about it, but doing it. And so in the boards that I serve or serve on, that I advise, I am constantly beating the drums for more diversity, but it comes very slowly. The fact that we have inequalities in pay, inequalities in promotion records, inequality in investment in businesses by gender or ethnicity is demonstrable proof that it's happening way too slow. But I go back to what I said earlier. The most successful businesses, the ones that I see, read about, and oftentimes am an advisor to, are the ones that are more diverse, not less diverse. So the takeaway for this is that there is very clear-cut evidence that more diversity makes your business stronger and allows you to build a better enterprise to serve the marketplace more effectively. That's the bottom line. But it is happening too slowly, and all of us on this podcast need to make a commitment. If we believe in doing more and doing better for the worlds that we serve, and I know that the audience here is working in the spaces where we're improving and saving lives, then this is not a practice run. This is the real deal, and diversity is essential.
Tony, I'd like to switch tacks a little bit here now. I know that Newport utilizes the platform developed by Doug Tatum in his book No Man's Land. Can you tell me a little bit about how that platform addresses the needs of investors and the capital markets and how it helps companies proceed through some of these challenging times that they so often face?
Sure. For reference, the book that Marty mentions is titled No Man's Land. It is subtitled Where Growing Companies Fail, but it is casually referred to by the tagline, too big to be small, too small to be big. And that perfectly describes where many of our businesses are. So if you say to someone, we're too big to be small, too small to be big, even if someone was from another planet, they would understand what that means. In No Man's Land, Doug Tatum took years and years of client experiences and began to distill those experiences down to some common threads, or what I would say are nearly immutable laws that allow companies to scale or succeed when going from small to large or small to scale, whatever that means. And those four immutable laws in the book are called the four M's. M. And in no particular order, they are the market that your business serves, the management team that you have executing, your model for the business, how the business works, and your money, that is the financial engine, the capitalization of the firm, of your organization. So four M's are the essential takeaway of the book No Man's Land. And that book, by the way, is now going on 12 years old. It was a top seller and is still very, very appropriate. It's an easy read. It's available online, of course. And how does it address the platform, or how does the No Man's Land platform or learnings address the needs of investors? Very simply, if any of us with businesses address the four M's, alignment with the market, M, having the right management team, M, having the right business model, M, having the right money or capital structure, then we are very simply de-risking the business in fact and in perception. And so for a prospective investor, she or he or the institution is looking at us and trying to decide a risk profile. And if you want to be on the low end of the spectrum of the risk profile, you can and should address the four M's in your business. So again, to restate, No Man's Land is a compendium of literally hundreds of experiences with entrepreneurs building their businesses where they're too big to be small, too small to be big. What did we learn? That there are nearly immutable laws associated with having the right alignment with the market, having the right management team, the right business model, and the right money structure. So those four M's, when addressed, reduce the risk in reality and in perception, and create the environment that we all want for more capital to flow to our firms to provide the fuel for growth.
So Tony, I have to admit, my next question is a bit of a setup for you. I know that you work a lot with law firms, with accounting firms, with investment banks, commercial banks, and other professionals in helping the companies that you work with and serve. So my question is, what assistance is available to these leadership teams and the companies that are in these capital markets? What does that assistance look like? And how best should a company take advantage of what's available to them out there?
In the state of Maryland, we have phenomenal resources available to companies of all sizes. And I'll just speak off the cuff about a few of them. Some are membership organizations. Some are what you might call trade groups. Some are study groups. Some are advisory groups. Many of them are not-for-profit. Many of them are for-profit, and the critical ingredient is you and your team, your leadership team, finding someone that you trust and have open communication with. Going back to my thesis about coachability, if you think that you fall into the category of being coachable, that's a good thing. Then if you seek out counsel, you have lots of choices. Again, off the cuff, I'm thinking of groups like the Association for Corporate Growth, the Mid-Atlantic Venture Association. Those are organizations where people from the capital markets ecosystem congregate to be close to business owners, perhaps like you, that are thinking about or in the process of growing an organization, because they want to meet you and help you connect to resources early stages, not after you've achieved all of your goals, but while you're coming up the growth or scaling curve. There are events. A couple that come to mind are Connectpreneur, Pitchmasters, and probably many others. And then there are state-sponsored organizations like TEDCO and the Small Business Development Centers associated with the University of Maryland system. So there are all kinds of resources that are available, many of them at no cost. The ones that are available for cost, again, I think the important ingredient is to make sure that you're open to be coachable, and secondly, that you find someone or a group with whom you have open communication, whom you can build rapport and trust, and move quickly down the path of implementing whatever counsel or advice you get. So as leader of a professional services firm, it's self-serving for me to say this, but when you have experienced women and men who've been there and done that, who have chosen as their career path to leverage their toolkits, their experiences to help others grow their business, it doesn't get much better than that. If you find that person, then you've got something good. And something to consider is to make that person or persons part of your inner circle. Your inner circle, in my mind, is the people, persons, whom you can air your most difficult challenges, your dirty laundry, and feel comfortable that they're not judging you, that they have your best interest in mind, and maybe even they are aligned with your best interest. Maybe they've got some investment in your organization. Maybe they are working toward some kind of project completion with you where there will be some kind of reward. Maybe there's a success fee. But the key thing is having advisors that you can be brutally open and honest with is essential. Why? Because running an enterprise, as everyone listening to this already knows, is lonely. Sometimes you don't have anyone to lean on. The outside world thinks it's all roses, and it ain't.
I agree, Tony. It's not all roses, that's for sure, but it can certainly be rewarding. So we've talked about a lot of things today with respect to capital markets, how to prepare for capital markets, what leadership teams need to look like. We talked about the four M's from Doug Tatum's book. Are there any best practices that you can share with us today, experiences that you've had that will kind of meld this all together for us?
I think that being part of social groups that offer perspectives, insights, training is something I see as a best practice. People who build incredibly successful organizations invariably are insatiable learners. And learning is kind of relative today. Does that mean being in a formal university setting? Maybe, but probably not. Does that mean being part of a social platform? Perhaps. Does it mean being part of a community, perhaps like the ones that I've mentioned and failed to mention, the Maryland Technology Council. I think being part of organizations that exist to advocate for their members is a best practice. If you're not part of such an organization, you're missing the boat. The other best practice is to get outside of your day-to-day on a regular basis. And this is one of the core tenets of No Man's Land, the book, which is get out of the weeds, get to a higher level, and think strategically about your business. Maybe that's a half day a month, maybe it's a half day a quarter, but it is time outside of your day-to-day routine to think about the key communities, your customers and clients, your employees or associates, and you. Okay? Obviously, taking time away from the business is always a challenge, but as a best practice, the people who get to higher ground routinely and with their teams, even better, are the ones that are invariably the most successful from an outcomes basis, whether that means selling more, having a higher employee morale, having a better quality of life for the owners. All of those measures are just better when you can take time away, clear your head, get to higher ground, think about where you are, where you want to go, and not be dealing with this tyranny of the urgent.
Tony, that's great. I really appreciate what you said about being a part of associations, about the quality of the inner circle. A friend and a mentor of mine often says that we are the average of the 10 people that we spend the most time with. And I think that's an important message and something that's critical for C-suite executives to understand. So is there anything else at this point, anything that we missed or didn't touch on that you would like to communicate?
I would. I think we have to be reflective and ask ourselves, are we coachable? If we're not, I encourage you to think about how you become more coachable. And then it's a question of, going back to what you just mentioned, Marty, you know, your existence looks a lot like the 10 people that you're closest to. So are you surrounding yourself with good quality people to coach, advise, provide perspective, even tell you no occasionally? And are you part of organizations where you can learn and test drive and talk openly with other peers about what's working and what's not? And then the last thing, I just want to emphasize that there are these four M's. If you're thinking about preparing for a capital event, you need to think about being aligned with the market. Are you really aligned with the marketplace today and going forward? Secondly, is your management team chock full with the right people in the right positions? And third, is your business model the right one for today's purposes and tomorrow's as you scale? And last but not least, your money. The way that you have your capital structure, the way that money flows in and out of your business, the way that you report internally and externally your accounting and financial results is the surefire way to address the risks in your business. And once again, if you reduce the real risk in your business and the perception of risk in your business, you're going to be much more attractive to the investment community. And the opportunity to get investment capital in whatever form is appropriate for you will flow much more easily.
Tony, that's great. Thank you so much for your time today. This is very, very sage advice. And I know that you spend a lot of time, you connect a lot of people, you do a lot of networking, and I know you're a very busy man. But because you are a connector, because you do like to put people together, I'm sure you won't mind if I tell everybody listening that if they want to get a hold of you, they can go to the website newportllc.com. That's newportllc.com. If they want your contact information, want to meet you, want to get to know you.
I love being part of this community, and I invite conversation anytime, just look me up. Thank you, Marty.
Great. Thanks, Tony. And everyone listening, this is Martin Rosendale with the Maryland Technology Council. You can find us at mdtechcouncil.com, and you've been listening to Capital M, the podcast about capital markets in Maryland. Thank you very much.